All right, hockey fans, it has been way too long, but we are back, and we are back in business here on The Obstructed View. It is Chris Hollis from Motown Wings. I am hosting the new and rejuvenated show. Obviously, as if you guys follow the blog, you know that we are a man down. We lost a good soldier and our good man Brian Kernicki, the producer. Brian's got some stuff going on and decided to take a step back. He's still hanging around. He's still bugging me though, giving me tips about what to do and how to make everything work well, but he will no longer be the day-to-day man behind the panel. Instead, that will it'll fall to myself and to one of the other guys that's hanging out on the show right now from over at the Mothership Wing in Motown. It's Casey Ritchie. Casey, what's going on, buddy?
Not much. I'm enjoying this much warmer weather and even better, the winds we've been getting.
That's right, man. Now, for those that don't know, Casey's in Virginia, and man, you've been getting lit up this winter, dude. You've had some serious snow out there. You're finally warming it up, though?
Yeah. It was kind of weird. My brothers moved to Austin, Texas this past summer, and, of course, we got the most snow that we've had in, like, 30 years.
There you go. And speaking of Austin, Texas, I'd be remiss. My good man, Rob Disher from the production line is on the horn with us too. Rob, what's going on, buddy?
Man, just living the dream down here. We got South by Southwest in town, so a lot of skinny jeans, a lot of Chuck Taylors.
That's right, man. You've been busy. Do you go hang out and check out any of those guys? Did you go see whoever it is, Brian Solis or any of them? Go chat it up, get some ideas for the business or what, man?
Haven't done that yet. I went to like a big happy hour kind of thing yesterday that a bunch of folks I work with do, but keeping it pretty gangster here, laying low until the music starts up.
That's right, folks, and we'll touch on it a little bit later, but wait, you got to hear this trip that Rob's going to be putting down next week once we get to H2H. This man is a warrior. He is a champion. He's going to take it seriously next week, and we're going to see if he gets through it. I think he will, but we'll talk about that a little bit later. But I got to introduce the third man on the crew from the now putting out multiple stories a day. He is throwing stuff out left and right. I can't keep up with him anymore. It's Matt Saylor from On the Wings. Matt, what's going on?
Not much. Glad to be back.
Good to hear from you, dude. How's things been going, dude?
Pretty well.
Yeah?
Pretty well. I had like a burst of creativity with the site this weekend, or at least working on the site, so it was nice to
do
some things I've been wanting to do for a while.
So. You are like a font of knowledge now, and I swear to God, every time I look at my feed demon, I've got like three or four different things from On the Wings hanging out in my feed demon, and keeping me entertained throughout the day, keeping me occupied while I try and hack out my one story a day or whatever I can come up with. But guys, I got to be honest with you. It is good to be back. We, you know, have been on hiatus for the past few weeks, trying to get some things in order. We had the Olympics kind of going on. We had, all kinds of different things. The Wings got to the break, did okay. The Swedes got eliminated. They didn't even medal, but the Canadians and the Red Wings staff, they wind up getting the gold there. And then we come back, and since the Olympic break, the Wings have been playing pretty darn good hockey, at least in my opinion. So I'm going to open up. We're going to open up the first show back here with what we're going to call the state of the skate. And basically, I'm just want to know, guys, what do you think about the team right now? Dish, I'm going to start with you, man. From the break onwards, what's your take on this team right now?
Well, man, you know, I kind of feel I'm going to go a little obscure here. And I feel like this wing, being a Wings fan right now, must be like what it's like falling in love with a stripper here. I mean, I feel like you come into this thing and you're naturally a little bit guarded. You know, there's all these like red flags, all over the place. But you know, after a while, you know, she slowly kind of like maybe turns into like a kind of a decent girlfriend, but you're still sitting here like, you know, waiting to the point where you're not living in constant fear of her former XFL boyfriend coming back and beating the shit out of you.
So I kind of feel like, he hate me, dude. He hate me.
Yeah.
You're the he hates then, or what? Like, what's going on there?
More or less. You know, but I mean, I feel like it's kind of like that being a Wings fan right now. It's like you want to believe this thing's going to work, but it seemed like for so long there was like some inherent flaw that was going to drag this thing down. But even if I'm still a little bit damaged, a little bit guarded right now in this thing, it is kind of starting to come together. You know, and I think that has everything to do with the fact that our best players are playing like it. You know, like Pavel's been unbelievable, and Nick and Rafi have been great, and Mule and Homer have come along, and I think that you're kind of starting to see the tiers of forwards kind of emerge on this team. There's a little bit more of like a caste system now, and I mean that like in like a good sense. You know, like we're letting kind of like the grinders be the grinders, and we're letting like the elite guys, like they're kind of looking like elite guys, and then like, you know, Bertuzzi still looks like an asshole, but then again, like what else is new?
Right. You know, Bertuzzi. He's you know, he's been tough right now. He's had a tough go of it. We might touch on him a little bit later. I think we have to at some point. I think that's like a staple of the show. You know, that is what we founded the show on, is Bertuzzi hating. But before we get to it, Matt, let me kick it over to you. What's your state of the state? I know that there was a stretch where the Wings came out and then they played well, and then they had that crucial game against Calgary last week. Wound up losing that one. Things looked a little tough, and then they've basically flipped a switch since then. You know, how are you feeling about this team right now?
I'm feeling pretty good. I know you probably may have seen my post after the Minnesota game, and I was on, like I guess I would say cloud nine or whatever. Bottom, I thought I was feeling really good at that point. Since then, it's been a little less exciting because they've had these kind of ugly wins, but I think that they can, that Minnesota game showed that they still have it in them to play like we know they can play, and I think that they're just getting warmed up. Myself, they seem to really finally have. They seem to think they finally got it, that they really need to start playing better. I think before they were kind of deluding themselves into thinking they were okay, it seemed, and then for some reason Minnesota, they just really broke it out after the Calgary game. It must have been a big motivating factor, but it's like my wife was saying. She said that it seemed like somebody walked into the locker room and finally said, "You know what? Ninth doesn't get into the playoffs." It seems like they had some kind of personal revelation that they just said, "You know what? We're not going to make it if we keep playing like this." And they stepped it up, and I think down the stretch, they're going to continue. Doesn't seem like they're showing any signs of really slowing down a lot. So,
you know, I think you look at the situation with them, and obviously, you know, that Calgary game last week was real tough to see them lose, and then obviously the Minnesota game was just kind of the, like you said, the complete 180. The Wings come out, they play a complete game, they put down the Wild 5-1. I mean, it was impressive all around. I'm looking at last night's game, though, against Calgary, where they go to Calgary and win 2-1 and basically pull the rug out from Calgary at the end of the game, because we haven't seen a lot of that this year, and the Wings haven't necessarily always had to do that. And I think we've kind of been waiting for that. The Wings, for whatever reason, have given up late goals all season long. They haven't been able to protect the lead in the third period. They have struggled mightily in the third period, and it always seems like it carries into overtime or it carries into the shootout. And then we either lose or we get the win. But more times than not, we're losing there, obviously, as evidenced by our 12 extra frame losses that we have this season. I love last night's game, and I highlighted this in my post today. I said, you know, it was the perfect game, even if it wasn't perfectly played, because they came out and they did the things that we've been wanting them to do all season. Maybe, you know, in the Minnesota game, we got the finesse, we got the goal scoring, we got the points. In this one, we got the dirty, the gritty goals, we got the what we're famous for, what Homer's famous for, getting in front, wreaking havoc, and at the end of the day, they hung with it in a very hostile place with a hostile team in Calgary sitting right there, and they pulled one out, and they just basically took one away from Calgary and walked right out of their building with it. I feel like that is the statement game right now for this team. And I don't know, Casey, what do you think? I mean, you look at the way that they've played since the Olympic break to where they're at right now, and how are you feeling about what they've done and where they're going?
It's definitely great to see them start to put together some wins. And yeah, I think a lot of that, their success recently has gone with their power play and penalty kill. I mean, they scored in their 10th straight power play goal in the 10th straight game last night, and stuff like that starting to come around. So before the break, it seemed like a lot of that was kind of lagging behind. The power play was pretty ineffective. But I think now that we've got all the guys back that are needed back, we don't have, like, you know, Patrick Eves playing on the power play. We have Franzen playing on the power play. So there's a huge difference so far in the lineup, and I think it's starting to pay off in terms of the wins. It has to. Too good to lose at this point. And I think, just the way they're starting to think about the playoffs in terms of maybe not making it, it's also putting a little bit of a desperation factor in, and it's probably making them all play a little bit better.
I think, you know, the desperation factor is definitely something that we've been waiting to see, and whether or not, you know, it's unfortunate that it's taken so long to get to this point with this team now. But, you know, one of the things that Matt, you and I were joking about there for a second was that now, you know, the Wings, basically they control their own destiny now. Like they are, if they win out, they're in, obviously, because they're in that eight spot. And I mean, obviously that's something that, you know, who knows if that's going to happen, if they're going to win out, but it's a better feeling to be in control of where you go. And it's something that the Wings haven't necessarily had a strong grasp on for the entire season. Wouldn't you say, Matt?
No, they definitely haven't. They've had their destiny decided for them by some of those freak hockey guy accidents. I know that there's been a lot of talk about not using injuries as an excuse, and that's I definitely buy that. But also, there's sort of an undeniable fact that they just couldn't do what we expect them to do with the roster they had all season. And now to finally be healthy, to have started being healthy right at the point where they were within like range. To make the playoffs, I think that now they definitely have the destiny in their hands, and they can. It's up to them, you know, to make the playoffs, and it'll be their, how to put it exactly, but it'll be their. It's their job to do it, and they have the ability to do it. So,
you know, I just adding on to that, I feel like there have actually been a few points where we did have our own destiny in our hands, and we just didn't capitalize on it. And like, you don't have to really look any further back than like a week ago, when we had the chance to put some distance on Calgary, and we just choked. You know, so I think that, you know, if there's an emerging identity, maybe it's that we see the opportunities and we can actually execute, as opposed to being in teetering on ninth place, you know, potentially being able to put some distance here and then not executing on it.
You talk about execution and playing and getting it done. You know, I think we all kind of are hopeful. I think everybody's feeling hopeful and optimistic right now about this team after the performance. They finally strung three together since, I believe it was December for the first time. You know, they're not playing. They're playing their game. They get 3 days off, and then they close out their last trip out to Canada with Edmonton on Friday, Vancouver on Saturday, and a very unorthodox kind of setup where now they have 3 days off, and they'll be in Kelowna, I do believe. Kind of resting, relaxing, and then getting some good practice in. But guys, one of the as we move along here, one of the guys that hasn't been a part of this destiny recently, and kind of had his hand in the mix is Big Rig John Erickson. And I know Mrs. Petrella is beside herself right now because the Rig is not in the lineup, and she is a Big Rig fan. But you know, I think there. You know, Matt, you touched on it on one of the I saw it on Google Buzz today, but I believe Tyler from the Triple D, who's on the show here a bunch with us, actually said he wouldn't be surprised if Erickson is not on the ice for the rest of the season. And it's not – I think it's obviously not because of what Brett Lebed is doing. I think it's more a testament to what Lilja is doing and the fact that Lilja and Lebed have played together. But, Matt, is there any truth to that in your mind? Have we seen the last of John Erickson in this regular season, or is he going to come back at some point, you think?
Well, I mean, if you buy the idea that you don't change a winning lineup, I think that could be true as long as if the Wings win out, obviously. Even though Babs wants to get Erickson in a couple times or in every couple games, he also seems to believe firmly in you don't change that winning lineup. And until we see a loss or unless there's an injury, there's no way I can see him coming back. Now, I don't know. Like you said, it's not really what Leb is doing, but it is. There is sort of some chemistry there between Lilja and Lebda. Nothing like Rafalski and Lidstrom or something, but they have some level of comfort there that I don't know that Erickson and Lilja could have, or we obviously know that Erickson and Lebda can't have it. So I think even if there is a loss, Babs might decide not to. But I really would be surprised to see him at this point.
Casey, Go ahead, Dish. What do you got?
I mean, I see that last, that like sixth defenseman spot is almost like a tryout position. You know, even if we have the same guy in that role all year, I kind of feel like that's the place where like you either, you know, give some guy who's been in the league a while a chance to, you know, really put himself solidly on a roster, or you put a young guy in there with the hopes that he develops and rounds out and moves up with the team. And Erickson, I feel like, has just failed that tryout position this year. I mean, I think the next time we see Johnny Rig You know, he's going to be in the, it'll be when they come out with the Men of the Detroit Blue Line, calendar or something like that. I mean, we're, just, we're not, I don't see him making it back here. I don't think it's because, Lebda's playing some tits out hockey. I just think that he's just not playing well.
Now, the real question, Dish, is Big Rig Johnny E, is he good enough to make it in the, to the June and July portion, the hot summer months portion of that, Blue Lion calendar? I mean, or is he kind of like in the, is he a December kind of guy? What do you think?
Well, you know, I think if I've got to channel Miss Petrella here in this space, I think you got to give him the primetime real estate. I mean, I don't see who gets it over.
No, Chris Osgood for you, huh?
Yeah, no.
No, you know, it's, you know, Casey, you look at this, and it's, the Blue Line has been, for lack of a better term, it's been an absolute clusterfuck all season. I mean, it's just been injuries and movement and Meech and Lebda and then Erickson and Janik and you just name it. There have been so many, it's been a swinging door in a lot of ways. At this point, you have to, and like Matt was saying and Rob was saying, you're starting to get fixed on a group that's working. Lilja is playing well with Lebda for whatever reason. Maybe it's because they played together last season and that was that pairing. But they are finding that chemistry together. But at the same time, you're in kind of a pickle and you want to, you know, you want Big Rig to be getting in there and getting some time and seeing if you're going to get a return on this almost $1 million a year investment that you just made in him. But, you know, at what point do you say enough is enough? Have we finally hit the point where we could just sit him for the rest of the year and be comfortable with it because the playoff push is taken over so much? Or can Erickson, if needed, come in and contribute to that playoff push?
First off, I'm glad that we can say clusterfuck on here now. That's an awesome word. But that is probably the best term for the way that six spot or the fifth spot's been all year long. And, you know, I think, and maybe it's just me, but I actually think Lebda's been playing really, really well of late. He's starting to do the little things that he never used to do. And I think it's because to some degree he had to cover for Erickson, earlier when they were paired together. So he wasn't able to play his game of, you know, getting out to the corners with his speed. And he's starting to do a lot of things like poke check the puck away from guys that he would normally just, you know, before just stand and watch them do it, because he would have to turn and cover for Erickson. But
right, you can go. Sorry, I don't want to interrupt, but yeah, I totally buy it. That's what I'm saying all season. Go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah, I think Erickson's, I mean, he played really well in the playoffs last year. I mean, there's no denying that. But it's just, for whatever reason, it hasn't worked for him this year. And I don't see the point in putting him in if he's going to be playing like he is. For every time that he's on the ice, I watch, you know, to see what he's doing. Most of the time he's just standing there. And that's not what we can't afford that with Lilja out there too. I mean, they're both not the fastest players in the world. So it's kind of like a athletic thing and a mental thing. He looks a little bit lost out there now that he's out there night in, night out. But I think Lebda's been pretty solid, and I think he deserves to play in that spot over him.
You know,
here's the thing about – sorry, Chris.
Go ahead, Matt. Go ahead.
Here's the thing about my theory on Lebda and Erickson is basically, first with Johnny, you know he's going to be a good player in the league. I believe that at least. He's going to be a good player in the league one day. The thing is, there's a reason he was drafted last, and just because he's not a Drew Doughty type. He's not the kind of guy he's going to be – up front, awesome. I mean, we kind of had I would consider sort of a fluke with him in the playoffs. But that's not what we can expect of him right out of the gate. I think once he got into the grind of the whole season, he definitely got out of that high that he had when he was in the playoffs. It's something that he's gonna be on a long-term development curve. He's not gonna be this great player right off the bat. I think the expectations were set a little bit too high with him, that initial impression. When you pair him with a guy like Lebda, that really probably hurt his development a lot, because Lebda is a lot of things, but he's not a mentor to a young rookie defenseman. I think Lebda can be a competent defenseman with a certain skill set that is beneficial to a team that moves the puck like the Wings do. He's got good speed. He has decent offensive instincts when he's able to use them. He's not the best defensive defenseman, but, you know, that's, we don't, I mean, he never had to be before. Now with Johnny on the team, he had the shoulders responsibility of babysitting Johnny. And Brett is a pretty new player to the league too. I think that was kind of a heavy burden for him to bear. And now you see, like you were saying, Casey, that with Lilja, Lebedev can sort of be himself a little bit more now. And you see some kickbacks on that now. And that's a good thing. I think with Johnny, that's the tragedy of having to let Chelios go. I think Johnny, with another year of Chelios, would have been a much better player this year. Or at least another veteran. Cause, you know, it's hard to really pair him with a veteran when he's not on a very good curve. But if you had a guy like Chelios in the lineup who could play on that third pairing, you know, Johnny would have, I think he would have improved a lot. So, it's a tough situation for him because it's probably really hurting his confidence to have this happen to him. You know, he's expecting to be a little bit better in the NHL and then to have this horrible year. Or it's not really horrible, but really kind of a weak year. You know, it probably set him back. So, interesting to see where he goes from here.
Yeah, okay, two things though. I think one, before we like get on the Brett Lebda for MVP, train here. I think it's important to like, not get into a comparative science thing. I mean, I get that he's playing better than Eriksson, but it's like the old adage of like, you know, all horses look fast when they're running against trees kind of thing. I think he is playing better than Eriksson. I don't think that he's like playing great. I mean, there's still a handful of times when he just looks lost as shit out there. That's point one. Point two, I think that what we're really overlooking here is that sixth spot, I think the reason that there's so much pressure in there is because everybody, Johnny Rigg included, they're all here in the big footsteps of one big Dougie Janik coming up there from Grand Rapids.
Oh, yeah.
My words. Playoff stretch, Doug Janik. It's going to happen.
Doug.
Dude, Jakob Kindl.
Yeah, right?
But no,
Dougie Janik.
I'm not saying that Lebda should be on the shortlist for the Norris or anything, but I think he's...
He's on my shortlist, Matt.
He's also gotten a bad rap this year. I think Wings fans, we have a tendency to want to find the whipping boy on a team. No matter how good the team is, and we were finding whipping boys on 2002 team, it was like, was it Luke or something like that? You know, whoever on the team is the worst player of great players, a number of pretty decent players, we would find him and rag on him all season. Not that I'm not saying that Lebda doesn't earn a lot of that, because he's had a really off year, but I still think that most guys on the team would be pretty well thought of on other squads. It is we get really critical and. Lebda's not playing awesome, but he's certainly been better, and that may not be saying a lot, but it's definitely noticeable. I don't know that Johnny, you know, I think it was Casey said that Johnny and Eric and Lilja together would kind of be a nightmare to me because they both don't have the foot speed. So I think right now the best pairing we have for the third slot is Lilja and Lebda.
I tend to agree with that point. I see all the points and. You play with the cards that you're dealt, you know, the hand that you're dealt right now, and that's what it is. I think that, obviously, Lilja, he looks good. I think we can all say he's looked pretty good, save for that nasty-ass turnover he threw last night in Calgary there. But, you know, he got handcuffed a little bit on it. That's fine. He does look a little slow to me, though, and that's, you know, that's natural. Like, he's been out for a year. He's going to work his way back into the lineup and into the flow of an NHL game. But the thing is, and Matt, you touched on it, is that, you know, Lilja he's a defensive defenseman. He plays the position. Like, he bodies up. He does a nice job knowing where he needs to be, and he makes those plays. And he works well with a guy like Lebda, at least in my opinion, because he's a smart guy, and he can make that defensive kind of decision. He can take the defensive decision-making upon him and dictate how the defense is going to play when he and Brett are on the ice. He can let Lebda kind of use whatever athleticism, you know, he has and some of that playmaking and panache to just kind of go do and help out with whatever he wants to do. And he can be responsible Lilja can be responsible staying home, making smart defensive play. That's a big burden to put on one Brett Lebda to Johnny Eriksson. And I think that's like, and we talked about that. That's kind of what happened. Like you said, Lebda not a mentor for Eriksson. Sure, he's not the best defenseman in the world. He's serviceable. He's going to do an okay job. He's going to make his mistakes. That's fine. Those are the things that we have come to assume with him. But to put him in a position where, you know, you're trying to have him mentor Erickson, and then even when you put Erickson out there with anybody at this point, the predicament that the Wings got themselves in, they didn't have time to mentor anymore. You can't, it's tough to mentor when you're scrapping for points every night, and you need those points. So, I agree. Last season it would have been ideal to potentially, like, if we had the same scenario as last year, it'd be a perfect fit for Johnny Big Rig to come in here and, you know, just learn the system, learn how to play it, and not feel that pressure. But when you're scrambling for points and when you're scrambling for the playoffs, you know, the cream rises to the top here and we're seeing what's going on and he struggled, and I hope it's not a knock on his confidence, because I'm confident that the kid can be a good player. And I think you said, Matt, you know, it's going to take some time with him. I think he can be a good NHL player. He's just going to need to work on it and hopefully find a way to build that confidence back up, because that is a scary thought if that confidence goes from him. But
it's like I said before, he's kind of on the Yuri Fisher curve. I remember back when Yuri was maturing, everybody was like, why isn't he better? Why, everybody said he's going to be awesome. Why isn't he, you know, this is exaggerating, but why isn't he winning the Norris? You know, everybody was really flipping out about him back in the day. And then right around the time he started getting good, and to a lot of people, that's when that heart thing happened, but he was going on. He had a longer development curve too, and my understanding has always been that the defensive position is really the hardest to learn, to the degree you really need to be totally successful as a young player in the NHL. So I think, especially considering Johnny's switch positions, he's got a road ahead of him.
And guys, though, you know, let's be honest here. Not everybody can surprise us the way that Jim Howard has surprised us, for example. And I mean, to kind of move it along here, guys. One of the other topics that's been big news, you know, it's kind of kicked up over the, it started as a little swell right after the Olympics, and now it's kind of picking up some steam is the Calder Trophy awarded to the league's top rookie, and obviously Jimma with his 27 wins this season. Can you believe that? 27 wins, guys. If you would have told me that at the beginning of this year, I would have just laughed and laughed and laughed and then told you just get the hell out of my face, because that would never happen. But
funny thing is, they wanted 25 out of him, supposedly. So.
Yeah, they wanted 25 out of him, and everybody thought Babcock was on some serious shit. And guess what? All of a sudden, now here we sit with 13 to go. Jimma is more than likely going to be a 30-game winner this season, knock on wood. No, I'm not going to.
You know, I think I just realized why Babs has been so hardcore starting Jimmy all the time.
Why is that?
He wanted to fulfill that prophecy.
There it is. So,
I'm just kidding. No, he had real good reasons, but.
Sailor, you figured it out. But, you know, guys, you look at Jimmy, and the Calder race right now is a lot of people feel that it's down between, obviously, Jimmy Howard and our actual newfound friend in Detroit, Tyler Myers, who lobbed that puck into the stands on Saturday that gave the Wings the eventual power play winning goal. The consensus that I'm hearing, guys, is that Myers does have the lead right now. It's tough. The guy's he's a rookie. He's a big, big kid on the blue line. 9 goals, 27 assists, 36 points. He's plus 9, and he's in a successful system in Buffalo. That said, Jimmy has been all kinds of impressive. Last year, Mason won the Calder from Columbus. It's been a goaltender that, you know, he did it. Casey, I'll throw it out to you, man. Can Jimma put on the heat and take that Calder away from Tyler Myers, or is it all for naught?
I think he can, and I think he could take the Calder, and probably should. I mean, think about some of the differences between the two of them. I mean, playing your first year in the league as a goalie, in my opinion, is a lot different than playing your first year in the league as a defenseman. I mean, in the AHL, the players are just as fast their shots aren't nearly as fast as in the NHL, and they move so much faster, and such a tough game for a goalie to get used to the type of passing that's in the NHL, whereas defensemen, I mean, you're allowed to move around and position yourself better to defend against things like that. But in goal, I mean, you're kind of stuck. If one of your guys in front of you messes up, you only have 4 feet that you can move over. So I think he's definitely shown, like, that he's been kind of deserving of what they've got. And I don't mean to say that the Red Wings' success is all Jimmy Howard, but the Sabres' success isn't nearly as much as part of Tyler Myers' impact. So
it's an interesting point. I'll hold off right now. Dish, what do you think, man? Let me send it over to you. What's your take on this?
I think Cage makes a really good point there. I think that he, if you look at like percentage of win attributed to a player, I think that you have to give a lot of that credit, not all of it. I think you have to give a lot of it to what Jimmy's done. And you know, I mean, I'm down here in Big 12 country, and you know, about this time of a month away from the Heisman every year, all the coaches in their hometown, in the home schools, start kind of pumping up their individual players that they're pushing out there for the Heisman. So I don't feel so bad about being a total unabashed homer on this thing. I think that you got to give it to Jimmy. And I think that the reason why is that he's been good enough that you almost massive pain in the ass it is to be a goalie in Detroit. I mean, you think about goalies that have come here and played well and still got run out of town on a rail. I mean, the best example I can think of is when we got Cujo a couple of years ago. And I mean, I was scared shitless of Cujo when he was in Toronto, and he played here, and I was pretty stoked about getting him in. And I didn't think he played that bad, okay? And people acted like he came out every night and took a shit on center ice, you know. And so, I think that we need to kind of keep that in mind. The fact that we've got a goaltender in here, where you know we can all kind of talk back and forth about if we want Ozzy in there or we want Jimmy. And I'm not saying that Jimmy's perfect, because I still think that he has a lot of problems with rebounds, but I think the fact that he stabilized his position says volumes about what about the caliber player he is. And the fact that he's done it as a rookie, to me, I don't think there's a whole lot more that you can accomplish.
Matt, to you, man. Go for it.
First off, I want to start off with this idea that it's been tough. That might be tough for Jimmy to play in Detroit. I got to say that I don't know that that's much of a factor in Jimmy's case specifically, just because I think this season a lot of fans, it's because it's been such a rough season from our perspective, we've been looking for anything positive we can take out of it, and I think we've overreacted on Jimmy in a positive way. He's been a good a light in this season, and so a lot of fans have gone over to him in such a degree that I don't think he has nearly the same pressure that other goalies in Detroit history have had to perform. I think people give him breaks they wouldn't give other goalies, and they give him credit that they might not give other goalies. So I don't think that it's been tough for him to play in Detroit, because the pressure has been a lot less this year than it might otherwise have been, because for some reason he won the fan base over. I think because, like I said, he's one of the few positives of the season so far, and for a fan base grasping at anything they can take away positive from every game, I think he was the beneficiary of that. So, but anyway, you guys know it's been my issue a lot of the season. Kind of the Jimmy Love, and I like the guy. I think he's a great goalie, and he's my pick for Calder too. If I got a vote, but I'm gonna base it on a slightly different criteria, which would be in the only head-to-head matchup this guy's had of the two big gaps that the two guys did. That they both did. I think Jimmy's were the least consequential. The rebounds and the goals, whereas you know my Tyler's shooting over the glass was a much bigger deal. So I think I'm going to go with Jimmy on that basis. And again, also with the fact that he's been a much better goalie, he's been much more important. I think Casey's point about Tyler not being, or Myers not being as big a part of the team's success as, say, Ryan Miller, I think that's a big factor to me. So,
well, I think you also have to look at how hard it is to find a true starting goalie in this league. I mean, I think that unless you have some rookie who comes out, a rookie forward that comes out and absolutely sets the league on fire, it's hard to give that to a forward, because, frankly, like every year there's some young forward that comes out. If it's a first year guy or a second year or a third year guy, there's some guy that comes out and goes on a tear. The defenseman, I think that's a tougher position to fill than forward. But I think that finding a night in, night out goalie, especially a young kid, and especially in Detroit. I mean, I can't think of the last guy that was, you know, it seemed like under the age of like 38 that came into Detroit. And was a consistent starter. I think that's a tough position to fill there. And I think that you need to kind of appreciate how rare it is that we've got this kid in there doing that.
Yeah, definitely. And there's some argument against him winning it because he's been like a 5-year pro or whatever. But I go with James Myrtle on this. It's basically the best player in his first full year in NHL. I think that's the way you got to look at it. And the fact that he has been in the pros longer than maybe than Tyler Meyer or this Duchesne kid from Colorado, I guess you can make some kind of argument about that. But I really, I don't know. I think it's kind of understood. You know, there's a reason that the rookies are classified the way they are. I think, you know, I kind of ignore that because it's like he did something that I don't know that a lot of guys could have done in his position. So, but it's definitely impressive.
Guys, Hollis, where are you going with this?
Dude, that's what I was about to say. This one, all I'm going to say is this. I brought it up earlier, and because I feel like I need to give some sort of a stat just to kind of like make my argument compelling and dial down the homerism here, I will say this. I am going to legitimize this thing and say that, look, the guy is going to probably, like I said, win 30 games. He has been at or near within the top five in goaltender statistics for most of this season. He is having a Tuukka Rask my ass. There is no way Tuukka is anywhere near as good as Jimmy Howard.
He's played like 20 less games, too.
Exactly.
He's played 19 games.
Exactly. Whatever.
He's played 19 more games than me, and I've been sitting on my fucking couch all season.
And that's my point. I am homerific towards Jimmy right now. I think, you know, for whatever reason, he's won me over, like Matt was saying. I still, you know, I'm still behind Ozzie. I think Ozzie's going to play Friday. I think he's going to beat the hell out of Edmonton, whatever. But for right now, for my money, Jimmy Howard, he has been consistent. He has gotten the job done. And if the Wings make the playoffs, he will be one of the biggest reasons that they've gotten here because he has, like Matt said, been one of the bright spots, been one of the consistent spots throughout this season. Yes, he's got his slip-ups. Yes, he has his problems. He still needs to work on those rebounds, like you said, Rob. There are things that he needs to do. I don't think he's the greatest thing ever at this point. But come on, for a kid that started the season under the gun with the Red Wings fans and gave up six, you remember back to that game where he, you know, or was terrible in Edmonton. Terrible, terrible, yep. Terrible. And now he's competent and can get the job done here. And along the way, he's collected 27 wins. So, hey, I'm fine with him. I think that, you know, when you look at it from an MVP standpoint per team, who's done more for the team as a whole? Plus, think about it like this. Miller's going to win the friggin' Vezina anyways. Everybody knows that the East Coast GMs that vote on this are going to collaborate and make sure that Ryan Miller gets the Vezina. Tyler Myers doesn't need the Calder, man. That's enough hardware for them over there. You know, give it to Jimma. It's tough to be a goalie. It is tough to be a defenseman, I agree, but just look at Johnny Erickson in the first full season in the NHL and how the difference that can make. But I'm homerific for friggin' Jimma Howard. I'm homerific for Homer. I'm homerific for everybody right now, man. Red Wings. Now I'm fired up.
I got three more things in.
Go ahead, Matt.
I don't know if you guys saw this link that I posted last week. It was that link to that podcast from the Globe and Mail with James Myrtle and Eric Tuhachik were talking. And they brought up this idea that that apparently the sense that those guys get from other media members and other voters on this Calder race is that there's this idea that Jimmy playing for Detroit has an unfair kind of almost like an unfair advantage. In Detroit, which I can't even fathom, is still an argument this year of all years.
Yeah, that's garbage.
Having such a crappy year, you know, any other year, you could see why people might think that, even if I might disagree. But that is just unbelievable to me. And then the thing about Tyler Meyer playing in front of Ryan Miller, how does that? And you're just saying he's going to be a Vezina winner, probably. How do you think that might affect his stats? I don't know. I think any young defenseman playing in front of Ryan Miller is going to look a little better than maybe he is. And I'm not saying he's not a good kid, not a good player, but
right.
I think Jimmy playing behind a Red Wings team that sucked most of the season versus Tyler Myers playing in front of a goalie who's basically been playing out of his mind all season. You tell me which probably did better, you know.
Boom. So, Matt Saylor laying down the gauntlet. I love it. That is it.
Jimmy for Heisman.
Go ahead, Matt. Go ahead.
I still feel anger about the 2004 Calder with Zetterberg getting robbed by that Barrett Jack Assman loser.
Barrett
so
who?
It's Barrett Jackman, the donkey there who's in St. Louis. I've never ever forgiven the voters for that. So I would like to see some kind of repayment.
That's right.
In the form of Jimmy Idiot.
Matt Saylor wants reparations in the form
yes.
of the trophy.
That was the worst. That was the biggest robbery in college trophy history, in my opinion.
Make it right, voters. Make it right, says Matt Saylor. Make it right. Okay. That's the plea. Guys, go ahead, Casey.
I was going to say one more thing. I mean, think about, too, what Jimmy Howard's been shoved into. I mean, he's been shoved on into the spotlight on a team that's struggling to make the playoffs for the first time, or struggling to not miss the playoffs for the first time in 20 years or whatever. And that's a huge spotlight compared to playing as one of six defensemen on a team that's got a pretty easy division outside of Ottawa. I mean, I think that's another thing you can think about too, is the amount of pressure that he's been under, and he's been able to perform under all that pressure.
Yeah, it's a second that Petrella and I were talking about today. We cannot discount the fact that he plays in the Eastern Conference, and the Eastern Conference is a motherfucking joke. There's no way around this thing.
Petrella and I
decided today we could both go out and play drunk after a 7-day bender and be a 4 seed in the playoffs in the Eastern Conference.
When you look at Washington, that's a good offensive team. When they're 30 points ahead of or any team else in the Southeast, I mean, bring back the Southeast moniker, I guess.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah, the East is kind of a joke, and everybody knows that, and it's been that way for years.
Yep. Totally agree with you guys, man. It's a good argument, and I'm all riled up now. I'm excited. We'll see what happens. Let's hope that Jimmy can keep it together down the stretch. I think he will. I think he's settling nicely. I think we're going to get to see some Osgood, and you know, that's a good thing too for the Wings to kind of hopefully kind of keep the flow going and get them towards the playoffs. But you know, guys, we've been serious for the entire show here, and we've got it. I personally, this is just an excuse for me to try out some new tools here on the software. But I thought we'd play a little. Red Wings kind of name that wing game, you know, like a little game show. Hang on, I think I got a little game show music. We can pop that on here. There we go. That's the
song. Oh, hell yeah. Come on down.
That's right. So, you know, we're going to let's do a little this. I got three guys lined up right now that I've pulled out. We're going to give you a little information on them, and we're going to see if you can name that wing. And I'm going to start with let's see. Rob, why don't I start?
Typing it or...
I'm going to start with you, Rob. This wing. Are you ready? Are you ready to go here? Hold on.
I'm ready.
Let me. I'm going to let you focus here. I'm going to take the music out of the equation here.
Yeah, I can play in the environment. I get it. this is like the Winter Classic of TOV.
So, you know, that's right.
It's a little different. It's okay.
wind push on the breakaway.
Open it up.
All right, so here we go.
The question and answer was really aided by the wind there.
That's right. That's how it is.
Let's got see. The eye black on.
Let's see, Rob, first question to you. This wing has 3 goals and 6 assists in his last 20 games while going -5 over his last 13. Can you name that wing?
I mean, I want to jump on this thing and just say that this has got to be Todd Bertuzzi. But I feel like those stats are a little bit even generous for him.
What's your answer, dude?
I'm going with it. I'm going with the. I feel like if this opens up anti-Bertuzzi talk, then I'm riding that train. Give me what? Todd Bertuzzi.
He wants Todd Bertuzzi for 500. Oh. Dan Cleary, boys and girls. Dan Cleary. Guys, Dan Cleary. Struggling, you know, people have been talking about him all season, kind of getting it together a little bit, being a physical force. You hear Babcock. He's the one. Now, Babcock, we all know this. He'll talk about guys after the game, be like, oh, they had a great game. They had a fabulous game. Between Cleary.
Happened last night where he said the Bertuzzi line looked great.
Right.
And they did.
I think, you know, I'll give Bertuzzi a little bit of credit last night. I think he looked better in the second period. He was atrocious in the first period, but here's the thing. When Babcock comes out and says a guy played well, hey, I want to be talking about like Drew Miller effort last night. I don't care that Miller missed the net a couple of times there. Whatever, dude. We're not, you know.
Times.
Yeah. But he was noticeable. Like, you saw Miller making plays happen out there.
It's heartbreaking.
It is. It is heartbreaking. Dan Cleary, though, guys, he has struggled this year. You know, he's one that needs to get ramped up. We've talked about it all season. Danny Cleary needs to get ramped up and kind of make it happen. So now, Rob, here's the thing. Now that you've guessed incorrectly, you need to say something nice about Dan Cleary or Todd Bertuzzi. Your choice. Something nice.
Can I phone a friend in this
yes.
one?
Yes. Absolutely.
I think this is it's gonna be very difficult. I hear that the Newfoundland is a gorgeous place. That's about as good as I can do right now. I mean, the Dan Cleary thing is tough. I mean, this is Petrel and I were talking about this too. I don't know where the hell that guy's been.
Yeah.
And it's depressing the shit out of me because if there's a guy that you want to come in and play well, I mean, there's a handful of guys in the team that, like, you don't worry about, and there's a handful of guys in the team who you don't expect anything from, and then, like, there's, like, this gap in the middle where there's these guys that, like, you really, really want them to just go out and blow the doors off the joint. I think that Flip falls into that category. You know, I think that Homer falls into that category. I definitely think that Dan Cleary falls into that category.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe that's something nice is that I didn't put him in, like, the bottom third bracket there. But I just, I really, I'm predisposed to wanting Dan Cleary to play well, and that's a very hard train to be the commander of at this point because I don't know if he's trying to be too pretty out there, if he's like kind of forgotten that he's like just supposed to be like the rugged like north south kind of guy, but it just seems like he's like got this like lost identity, like he wants to go back to being like a scorer like he was early in his career or something. I can't figure it out, but I don't know. I feel like if I talk any more about this thing, I'm just going to devolve into cuss words, so I'll stop it.
I think he's
I think he has a lot to do with Zetterberg.
Yeah, I do. I was just about to say the same thing, man. He's like a twin on and off the ice, or he tries to be. He emulates Hank, the way they dress, the way they handle. I don't know what it is, man. Like, Cleary. When I think Dan Cleary, I think of like a flannel shirt going to cut down a friggin' tree or something, dude. Not wearing tight jeans with like a tight white T-shirt and a sweater that's three sizes too small. That's
no way.
Leave it to Hank and his supermodel girlfriend for that stuff. Don't Dan rugged Newfoundland, Canada proud. Bro. Come on.
Yeah, no. Dan Cleary is the past blue ribbon of this team. He's not. He's not like the Amstel Light.
He's the brawny man.
Yeah.
But his fortunes are tied to Zetterberg. That's for sure.
That is.
Whenever he's not producing, Dan Cleary is definitely not.
Yep. Yep. I agree. All right. We've got one down, and we've got two more to go here, though. So we're gonna dive back in here. Cue the music up again here. So here we go. Oh, let's see. I'm gonna go over to Matt Saylor here. Matt, we got one for you. This one, I'm gonna need you to be a little creative in your thinking. This one's a little outside the box. So, name this wing. Five goals, and remember this wing. Name this wing. 5 goals, 3 assists, 8 points on the season with a -8 rating. Matt Saylor, name that wing. Wing, in parentheses.
Right.
That's my hint for you.
Say it again. What are the stats?
Five goals, 3 assists for a total of 8 points on the season, and he's gone a remarkable -8. On the season.
Daryl Bootland? Can I jump in here?
Chris Newberry.
Yes,
anybody? Anybody?
No, I got nothing.
Oh, it was a trick question, guys. Like I said, it was a little bit of a trick question. It's our good friend Billy Lano. Billy Lano and the Lano Lounge guys. Played a grand total of 3 games in Philadelphia. Matt, I pulled that one over your head, dude. I know.
Yeah, well, see, he's so far out of my thinking now, I couldn't pull him out.
Exactly. Lano, guys.
Non-entity.
Did anybody see that goal that he scored? Now, I wanted to bring, this is why I put Lano in there. I wanted to bring up, he actually had a very nice goal for Philadelphia that got replayed over and over and over again. But.
Oh, he finally got in the lineup?
He did. He's played 3 games since he got over there. 3 games since the Olympic whenever the hell he got traded out of Detroit. I mean, what a bust, huh? What a bust. It was a nice goal, though, but we kind of had to pick on him a little bit here, It's never a TOV for our first show back. It's never a TOV until you talk shit about Billy Lano. And I know, Dish, you enjoy doing that just as much as anybody, right?
Always. It's like the Lano Lounge. The Lano Lounge is very empty these days.
It is. We need somebody else. Dan Cleary's quickly moving in, though. That's what I'm saying. Oh, my God. All right.
So, is the next one about the Gaxson?
It could be. It very well could be. And it's going to go to Casey as we get the music back on. By the way, this tool is the shit. I'm having so much fun with this. This is too much fun. All right. Expect more crazy crap like this the rest of this year, this thing. Anyways, Casey, to you. For the win today on Name That Wing, this Red Wing has 0 goals in his last 18 games. He has 8 points in his last 18 games, and he is a minus 5 in his last 18 games. Casey Ritchie, name that wing.
Oh, I know this one, I'm pretty sure. And I know a lot of people know this one. Todd Bertuzzi?
Todd Bertuzzi is correct. You're going to get the cheer. Getting the cheer. If I knew where the other stuff was, there's a little applause for you. You are a winner. Todd Bertuzzi. Guys, what is going on with Bertuzzi lately? I 18 games. Remember, guys, and this is, we had discussions about Bert and the potential for him coming back next year and whatnot. But Dish, I know you've been itching to get going on this after that post that you wrote about him a couple days ago, where you kind of just laid into him, man. What's up with Todd? What's up with employee number 44?
I think it's worth pointing out here that, you know, this season started off with the production line as a house divided, with Petrella ragging on Bertuzzi every time he like had like a mismatched sweater on, and me trying to defend him as a guy who actually could contribute to the team. The first time I got to come on this lovely show, I put Bertuzzi, I think, as like my like first half MVP or something shit like that, because I thought that there was a period in the season where you could attribute a handful of the wins that we had directly to his involvement. I mean, he was going crazy there for a bit. And, like, you know, he had this kind of, like, mad scientist thing where it's like, I don't know what's going on here, but I kind of like it because it's working. But I just, for whatever reason, he just seems to be this, like, magnet for suck out on the ice. It's like he's just this, like, black hole from which, like, you know, good ideas and decent passes can't escape. I mean, it's the point where, like, the other, like, last night I was watching him, and it never even dawned on me until last night, and of course Petrella already noted this, that he's a shitty skater. I mean, like, it almost, like, there was one point where he was just kind of, like, you know, rolling along, and he had, like, this massive wobble. And, I mean, like, to the point where, like, you wanted to, like, you know, go treat him like some 5-year-old and give him the plastic chair to go push around out there. I don't know, man. I've had it. It's been a hard slog towing the sled uphill of the pro Bertuzzi train. And I just think that I think the ropes are breaking. I think it's about to slide back downhill here.
Guys, Matt, Casey, anything on Todd after that very impassioned argument from Mr. Disher there?
Yeah, he's got a rough patch going right now. I don't know that he'll ever get out of it, especially since the pressure's not on him anymore to score now that Franz is back and the team's healthy. I think he's basically been relegated down to that third line and probably feels like an afterthought now. I don't know if he's ever going to get out of this. So,
Chase,
I don't have much hope. Though I did look really good in the second period, I thought myself. I know a lot of people were ragging on him for last night, and you said something, Chris, earlier about he looked better in the second. But I agree with that. I think he looked a lot more interested in the second and a lot more energetic and really motivated. So if he can build on that, maybe.
The suck was limited for the second period last night, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Casey, go ahead, dude. Take it away, man. What are you thinking here about Big Bert?
I mean, like you said earlier in the season, we were talking about contract extension.
Whoops!
Right now, I think he's playing himself out.
Oops! I said, oops! Contract extension. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Now with Yuri Hudler in the wings.
Oh, here we go, Yuri Hudler. That's been Jesus. Oh God! Don't even
segue.
Go ahead, dude.
And now, I mean, he's playing himself out of a contract, and it's not just that he's not scoring. He's not doing some of the stuff that he was doing really well earlier in the season, like pressuring on defense. Now it seems like he's just standing around on defense instead of at least moving to someone on defense. But, I can only hate a player so much, but it's starting to overflow. And it's just, I don't know, it's kind of, it's like a, shit, I don't know what to call it.
You're so overtaken by hate and anger and frustration that, you do it.
Full of rage. No,
I feel like the emperor right now. It's like, let the hate guide you, Casey. It's okay.
God. Oh, man. God, so, nice. Jesus. Bert. Go ahead, Casey.
You so badly want him to succeed and move past to where people don't think of him. And people are always going to think of him tied to Steve Moore, but you also want people to think of him as a hockey player that could contribute to the team. And right now he's just kind of wearing that shine off that he had a little bit earlier.
He is definitely not contributing to the team so much right now. I agree. Guys, like we said, we've all kind of, the hate is running flat. I'm not hating him yet. But I've totally rethought my whole idea of that. Yeah, maybe Todd has a future with this team. He just doesn't fit the system. Like he, the system formed around him a little bit more, I think, when we had all those injuries. And now that it's back to the defined system of Franzen and Datsyuk, Holmstrom, and trying to work Zetterberg, even Zetterberg's struggling to get back into it a little bit there. But now that they're trying to work it back into the traditional system, I think you're really seeing Bertuzzi's struggles get magnified and elevated. It's kind of tough to see, and then I don't know that he has a spot anymore. I hate to say it, but I don't know that he has a spot anymore at this point.
I don't think he has a spot much in the NHL even anymore.
Yeah,
the game's sped up to a degree that he doesn't have the foot speed for, and also he's got a target on his back for the referees. I mean, he can't do anything to remotely physical on the nights without something happening to him, without him getting a call for something. I think he's changed so drastically from what he used to be. He's a shadow of his former self, and he's tried to adapt, and you can see it, but he's still a marked man for his reputation. And you're saying, Chris, like, with the system now, he doesn't fit with the system, puck moving system, speed system. And then the Wings have that physical edge to them that's it's underrated, but they do have it that he can't fully participate in because he's going to get called. And then he has everybody ragging on him for taking the penalty when sometimes it is his fault. He's not the world's smartest hockey player, but he's also up against it with the refs.
Yeah, agreed.
I don't think he has. I don't think he has much of a spot with the Wings probably going forward. And he certainly, if he doesn't have a spot with the Wings, I don't know that he has a spot with anybody. Because the Wings are the team that is going to give everybody a second chance, and nobody else is going
to. Yep, I would hate to see him stick around over somebody like a Drew Miller. That's for sure. But So there you go, guys. We're gonna wrap up the first ever edition of Name That Wing. Casey, our champion, even though I do feel bad because I kind of duped Matt a little bit, and I set Rob up for failure because I knew he was gonna go with Bertuzzi. I knew it. Yes, my evil plan worked, and just because I just wanna, I just wanna play the music one more time. It's just fun. It's fun. Can anybody name the show? This is anyone? No. It's from The Dating Game, by the way. The Dating Game, 1965, folks. If you were alive, I don't know.
That's classic.
Right? It is. It just kind of
gets... As we all fall in love once again with the objective view.
That's right. Once again. And then I say Todd Bertuzzi, and everybody just goes, oh, yeah, exactly. All right. I swear to God, I'm done playing with the sound effects now, guys.
Supporting on abuse.
Right, it is. Can we talk about Thomas Holmstrom?
Yeah, dude.
It reminds me of that the obstructive view thing. I know that the title was meant to kind of be a nod towards us having our biases and like the Joe and all that, but I always thought of it being related to Homer too. So
it can be. The TOV is whatever you want it to be.
But I mean, after his performance last night, there's been some talk today about his legacy with the Wings in the future, and I don't know. It's an interesting question to me. What do you guys think? Because I see him as one of the most important Wings of this era. As far as his contribution to so many points over the years, so many wins, so much success, and his sacrifice for the team has been greater than most any guy you can think of, except for maybe Stevie, as far as physically. And I know that the Wings, they really reserve those rafter spots for truly special players. But I mean, if I had a choice, I would absolutely put his number up there, even accounting for that, because he's such an important piece of this team's success. But I don't know why I decided to talk about him now, but if you, what do you guys think?
I kind of agree with you. I mean, he doesn't have all the actual goal numbers that, some of the other players have, but he's probably been a part of just as many, you know. He doesn't get the assist for putting his ass in the goalie's face, but it you know, blocks the view enough that a shot from the point from Lidstrom can get through. And it's he's definitely one of those guys that puts his body on the line every night. I mean, I wouldn't want to go out and stand in front of a goal and get a puck shot at me once at that speed. But he does it every night with a evil looking smile on his face, because yeah, that's the Demolition Man. And who's going to wear 96 anyway? So just retire it.
Yeah, I think that, again, going back to like that three tier of players thing, you know, Homer's definitely one of those guys that you love. And I think that he has, almost single-handedly allowed us to kind of create an identity where I feel like the offense kind of flows through him, where like that whole concept of getting traffic in front of the net, not like we're the only people out there doing this, but like I feel like we have created an offensive identity that's very that's pretty centered around who he is. I do think though that before you talk about putting guys in the rafters, you need to kind of maybe pump the brakes a little bit and look at who's already up there. I don't know if he's quite at that level. I mean, I think that when you look at, you know, Yzerman and Sawchuk and Lavecchio and Ted Lindsay, Sid Abel and Gordie Howe, those are pretty iconic guys. And I feel like you have to go from being a really great player and a guy that everybody loves to being almost transcendent to have your number up in the Joe. But
that's, well, who are we going to talk about in 50 years? I mean, when we're looking back, yeah, when we're in our retirement homes, who are we going to think about when we watch the Wings and they can't get a puck in the net because nobody's out front? Who are we going to be saying, well, I wish we still had Homer. Remember him? I don't know. I think he has the capability to be that transcendent player because he's such a so great at what he does. And it's to a degree that, I mean, nobody else can do what he does the way he can do it. I think there are other guys who can score goals, other guys who are clutch in a lot of ways, but I don't know that there aren't many guys on the team who can do what he did last night, and guys who can do what he does on a night-to-night basis, and guys that can do what he's done for this team over his career, and leading directly to wins. I mean, I wish I could go back on the tapes and have the time, unlimited time to do this, but knowing just how much he's been right there at the focal point of the attack every night for so long, he is like the funnel everything goes through on a lot of nights. So
I do think you have to tap the brakes a little bit, though, and my only counterpoint that would be somebody like Dino Cicerelli, who he wasn't with the Wings, I think, as long as Homer, but, you know, kind of played a similar role, and he's a fantastic guy in front of the net. But his jersey's not hanging from the rafters either.
Well, Dish,
yeah, he wasn't a career wing.
Let me come in and say this, guys. Here's my point. And Matt, I agree with every point you and Casey have made. Dish, I see where you're coming from. Here's kind of how I'm going to keep it short to an extent here and say this. Not every guy that's in the Hall of Fame is in the rafters. And I think that at the end of the day, Homer has the potential to be a Hall of Fame guy for the reasons that you've laid out, is that, you know, he is the staple, and he is the one that everybody agrees is the best at what he does there. He is a great player. He is a long-term player. He will get his night in Detroit. One night it will be Thomas Holmstrom night, and everybody will come out and they will celebrate him. But I think that for some reason, you know, I think it's because you look at a sport like baseball where everybody and their fucking brother used to get into the Hall of Fame. and all of a sudden the Hall of Fame kind of lost its value a little bit. Like it didn't mean quite as much to everybody that, you know, you were in the Hall of Fame. Where I think hockey fans respect it a little bit more. And I think we saw it when Brett Hull got in and Robitaille, Leach and Stevie, they all got into the Hall of Fame. I think Holmstrom alone, just because of the way he has spanned his career and he has defined himself with what he does and the cups and everything else, I think that he will be a strong candidate to get in the Hall one day. But I like to think, at least in my mind, that when you have had to have not only been a visionary and a remarkable leader, player, whatever, for a team, not just a team, the community, everybody needs to rally around you without a doubt. That's what Steve was, you know, how those guys were remarkable. I think you gotta kind of leave those rafters up there and those banners up there, and kind of, those are the premier. That is like the premier thing that you can receive as a player. And I think a tribute to Holmstrom and the Hall of Fame is something that is completely justified, and it would be, he's going to be completely deserving of it. I just don't quite see him at the echelon of a guy like a Lindsay or a Sawchuk or an Abel or even potentially, you know, an Yzerman.
You know, those those points are really valid. I understand that. And I accept that within Detroit especially, they have that very special honor to be put in the rafters. But I don't know. I just feel like we have Red Wings, this generation of Red Wings teams, this version, this edition of the Red Wings has to have two security blankets. We have Nick Lidstrom,
mm-hmm.
and we have Thomas Holmstrom. Mm-hmm. To me, at least, Holmstrom is the second security blanket. Now, what happens when we're all terrified of when Nick leaves. I think we don't understand quite yet what we're going to be missing when Homer leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you look at that and you consider that with Lidstrom's going to be gone, we all feel like we're screwed in a lot of ways. At least we're all terrified. We all don't want to think about it. We all want to just pretend that he's not close to retirement.
Right.
With Homer, he doesn't get the accolades that the Lidstrom gets for a lot of reasons. One of them is that he's not nearly his graceful player. He doesn't do things that are quite as high. I mean, he does things that are high profile because he's at the focal point of goals, but he doesn't do things as, I don't know, pretty as Nick Lidstrom does. You know, he's not as graceful. He doesn't do all these things that are kind of like, you can point to that and say, wow, that's easily quantifiable. He shut that play down. He took that slap shot and just powered it through. He, you know, poke checked that puck away on a critical play. I mean, Homer, he skates like crap. and he basically digs the puck out of the boards and happens to be at the focal point of a goal, but a lot of nights when he doesn't actually tip it in, you don't notice that. You're thinking about, oh, what a great shot that was by Franzen or whoever. So he kind of gets lost in the background. I think you made the point about, like, you got to have guys who have the public accolades. They're going to get that honor. So I understand that. That's why I sort of feel like it's sort of a unfortunate thing that Homer isn't there on the top tier of fan minds, considering what he does. And I think we're really, like I said, we're really going to be surprised how things are when he's gone. I think we're going to find that the offense is totally different. The fact that we don't have a guy who can tip the puck in like that. We don't have a guy who will take the beating out front. We're always talking about the wings not going to the net. Homer does that every night. Most everybody else on the team doesn't do that. We've tried grooming Franzen for it. He's not. He's become more of a perimeter skill player. And I don't know. I think we're going to appreciate him later. I just think we're going to really appreciate Holmes from later, and that's when I think the talk should really just begin.
I think those are all really good points, but we have 8 retired numbers right now, and one of those is Vlad. And so you have to look at, can you visualize Holmstrom's jersey sitting next to the number 19 in the rafters? And this is not a shot at Homer because love him. I think that he is incredibly valuable, but I think mm-hmm. that you have to look at how special it is to be up there next to, like, Terry Sawchuk. I don't think he quite clears that bar. I think the bar is incredibly high. I think he belongs in the hall. I think that, like, you know, we have Thomas Holmstrom night, and with, like, the montage, and, like, the blacked out Joe, and all the music and shit, but I don't think that his jersey goes up there.
I just still stand by the fact that he seems to me to be one of the most important Red Wings of the last 20 years, or at least 15 to 18 years, whenever as long he's been in the league. That's, to me, I mean, I wish I had the stats and everything to back it up, and like, because it's hard to quantify his stats because he doesn't get assists or a point in every time he's responsible for a goal. But you know, I feel like he's one of the most important wings of this generation, and that's something that's what those guys that are up the rafters right now are. Those guys were the most important wings of the generation, and to me, Homer is one of those guys for this generation. So.
I think it's a good point, and I agree with you. I think that, you know, Homer does get overlooked, but I look at it like this, and I think you made a good point in saying that. I think we kind of have to wait and really gain that appreciation again for him when he leaves. I don't think that, and you know, you said that you look at the guys that the greatest players of their generation up there. That's very true. And it's easy for us as little, when we were kids, to look back and read the stories of Howe and Sawchuk and Abel and everything and understand why they were important to Detroit. And then a guy like Yzerman transcended all of that. And that's why he has the C up there, because he came in and rode out the tough times and bridged the gap from past to present and future, and that's why he's up there right now. And I think down the road we'll sit back and we need to get older too before we can really understand how important some of these guys were. And you know, I think that here's the thing that I am happy about with Holmstrom is that he's doing it in Detroit, because if he was doing it somewhere else in Atlanta or Philadelphia or any one of those cities, he would be overlooked even more than he is right now. Because at the end of the day, I think we're all confident that Homer will get his due in Detroit, and he will be looked upon very, very favorably. He will get in the Hall because of being in Detroit. All of those things will happen because of Detroit. So in a league that is where superstars are crammed down our throat, and in a market where we are constantly subjected to that, it's just natural, I think, for Homer to get overlooked a little bit. But I think at the end of the day, I think in 10 years, I think you're right. I think we're all going to sit back and say, man, I wish we had fucking Thomas Holmstrom out there, because he would have deflected that in. And then when he comes back to the Joe, he'll be, you know, it'll be special. It'll be very special for all of us. I know I'll probably be there for that, God willing. But I think he's going to get his due. I think it's just going to take some time for us to kind of feel out and really appreciate what he's done for this organization.
I don't want to drag it out much longer. I just wanted to say one last thing. We forget about how much skill he has to do that too. Like the fact that he has to practice those deflections.
The fact that he has to get out of the way of Brett Lebda's friggin' shots off his feet too. I mean, come on.
But that's absurd. Like to have that skill to be able to do that. I mean, to be able to knock the puck out of the air like that. That's an incredible skill. It's just kind of underappreciated skill.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'll shut up now.
If I could have one last thing,
dive in, dude.
Then we're done. Then we're done. In terms of, who says
you're running the show now?
in terms of his impact on the community, I think he's done a lot because. If you think about it, how many goalies has he trained for a second career in proctology? I mean,
oh,
I've only been waiting for that one, Casey.
God dang!
I've had it for a while,
dude. I'm trying. Like,
sorry.
Oh, I totally missed the moment for the horn and the sound effects, but that's fine.
Let's do it again. Again, Casey.
I wish we had like a groan or like a boo. Wait a minute. Oh, we're booing you, Casey. No, I'm just kidding. That was good. Yeah. Guys, I think Matt, I'm glad you brought it up. It's a good topic to talk about. I think that, I think we can all say we know that Homer's a special player and he'll get his eventually. It's just the way it is at this point. I think it's unfortunate, but I love Homer. I hope he puts in 10 more this season. I hope he has he's got 20 goals. He got his 20th last night against Calgary. That's freaking awesome. Good on Homer. He's the man, and 96 for life. What up?
Now, next time we can talk about Fedorov.
Oh, now that'll be fun. I look forward to that discussion very much. Guys, we were going to, as we head into the last thing here, I did have something we were going to talk a little prognostications, but we've got the Twitter account. I'm looking at the Twitter page. It's been up and running throughout the entire show. We put out a tweet right beforehand saying, hey, we're recording. If you have any questions, fire them our way, and we'll get them on the show. And we did get a question from TPL's favorite Maria19 there on Twitter. Rob, I know you love her.
Hey.
You talk to Maria all the time, and she's a
– hot from Calgary.
She was actually at the game last night at the Saddle Dome. Had a little – it sounds like a little too much fun, but that's another story for another time. But she was there, got us the win. Maria wants to know, guys.
Can you even read this on air, by the way?
This question, I don't know. She has some of the things, Maria, we love you, but man, some of the stuff, it's crazy. You are crazy.
Keep it coming, Maria.
Rob loves it. Rob loves it. So Maria wants to know, guys, if the Wings for some reason don't make the playoffs, and I should just stop right there, Maria, what are you saying? Why?
What the fuck, Maria?
What the hell? That's garbage. Anyways, guys, if the playoffs, if the NHL decides not to let the Wings in the playoffs this year, let's put it like that.
Yeah. We're going to find out our listener base with that comment.
I know, right? Oh, boy. Saw it begin.
And that one about Eastern Conference earlier, too.
Yeah, this is going to be real interesting. I can't wait to see the hate.
I stand by it.
You know what? What else I stand behind?
At the end of a bender.
That's right.
And I alone.
That's it. And you know what else I stand behind? I stand behind Jim Howard for Calder. I stand behind him completely. Anyways, question is, if they don't make the playoffs, would you keep watching? And if yes, who are you cheering for? I'm going to start with you, Casey. If, for God forbid, the Wings don't make the playoffs, are you going to watch it? Who are you cheering for?
Both conferences, I guess.
Sure. Yeah, we'll go East and West. We'll go least and West. Right. Go ahead.
All right. Least, I'm going to go with Buffalo. Just because
of real American hero Ryan Miller. That's why.
Yes. That's exactly why. No, that really is why. And They're a fun team to watch. I like watching them, and I just kind of want them to win the cup, or get to there, at least. And Western Conference, I don't know. It's like, it's either Phoenix, just because of how, like, how hilarious
because
that would be.
Because it's a great hockey city?
Yes, yes. I mean, born and bred. or
part of team or fans.
or LA, I guess. I've liked watching them turn around from complete crap to what they are right now. And the other teams I just hate, so that eliminates them.
There you go. All right, Sailor, I pose the question to you, my friend. East and West, who you got if the Wings don't make it?
I guess I'll have to say, I'll do with West first. I'll go with KC, Phoenix, and or LA. Phoenix, because it is a great story, and the hockey jerk in me would like to see them win the cup and then have to move. And then
that is cold.
But anyway, the Kings, I think I said somewhere at some point, sometime last year, that the Kings were going to turn it around and be in the playoffs, when a lot of people were saying they weren't. So I would like to be justified, or like to be kind of backed up in that. So, you know, they're already going to make the playoffs, so that's basically what I was saying they were going to do. But it'd be cool if they won the cup too. And some, if the Wings don't make it, obviously. But yeah, in the East, kind of sound like a fanboy saying this, but probably Washington. I'd like to see. I mean, I've been in the Ovechkin camp of that whole Crosby Ovechkin debate for a long time, and I'd like to see Ovechkin do it and win the cup instead. You know, kind of, you know, it's be following up on Crosby, but at least prevent Crosby from winning another one. And I could stand behind that. So
nice. All right,
I don't know
Rob.
That's that terrible, I guess.
Rob, dude, tee it up. Who you got?
I still like Patrol and I coming out of the East. We got a very
I'm
good
changing
shot
my
there.
Answer.
Yes. I guess in all seriousness, I lived in D.C. for about 4 years, so I'll go Sailor there and say the Caps. I should preface any of this by saying this is a massive case of eliminating the worst case scenarios here. So. But I'd go with the Caps there, I guess. I don't know. I don't feel very good about any of those things. In the West, I guess when I kind of look at what teams I would like to see do well, I look at it in terms of what markets do I think would appreciate it the most winning the Cup. Like, where would it really make the most impact? And so I can't in good conscience say that Southern California or Arizona deserves a Stanley Cup champion, because I was living in Texas when the Stars won it. And people had no idea. Like, they thought it was like a NASCAR trophy or something when somebody brought the Stanley Cup out. So I can't go for that. So I will go with Vancouver in that one, because I think that it would be an unreal thing for the people up there. And I also think that Vancouver doesn't really have a whole lot more shots at this thing. I think that this is kind of their star, I think, in the next couple of years is going to be fading. I think that the other teams could stick around for a while. Chicago will probably have a shot for a while. San Jose is going to be a perennial first-round exit candidate. And then, you know, I obviously am not going to go for the Dive or the Predators, the Flames, anybody like that. So I will begrudgingly go with the Canucks out West and Petrella and I in the East.
Nice.
Do you think Chicago has a chance to be in it for a long while now with Campbell on and Huey in that?
It'll be interesting. I don't know, man. It'll be interesting.
I think they'll figure it out.
I think they'll figure it out.
Vancouver's had too much success already this year with the whole.
That's what I was going to say.
The city of Vancouver, I mean. So.
That was what I was going to say, Matt, is that, you know, I live three hours south of Vancouver. I can appreciate the fact that they have very passionate hockey fans, but come on, Christ. The city that's already saw a gold medal for their country, and, you know, and guys, don't forget this. If they win the cup, that means Michael Samuelson gets the cup, and he is just bad. He has just been giving it to us this year with
that.
How
wrong was that about him winning the
playoff? Whoa!
Oh,
awful. I wanted to cry. I wanted to cry. So here's where I'm going, guys. I am going total off the wall here. In the East, I'm going to say Montreal would be who I would be pulling for, just because I have a friend who's a Montreal Canadiens fan. I like them. That means they get in the playoffs, first of all. I don't even know what the fuck they're going to playoffs, but I, you know, it's a big time hockey city. They're passionate. It's a cool atmosphere when they play there. And I just like watching those games. I like the Canadians and I got nothing bad to say about them. So it is kind of going with what Rob was saying. It's kind of the just getting rid of the evils here, but I'm going to say, the Canadians out of the least and a surprise move. Now, if the Wings don't get in the playoffs, that means that Nashville and Calgary did. At least that's how I'm looking at it. So, if the Wings don't make the playoffs, I'm going to come out of it with a little bit of a surprise. I hope Nashville wins the cup. Honestly, I really hope Bubba wins one for the simple fact that that team, like, that fan base, say what you will about that fan base, but they could be ignorant about the game or whatever. The ones that do come out are very passionate about it, and they've had ownership discussions going on back and forth. The arena has to be renamed. It's like everything is going wrong in that city for them. Now, I do not want them winning the cup at the expense of the Red Wings. There's no fucking way. I hope we beat the hell out of them every time we play them for the rest of the season, and if we eliminate them out of the playoffs, so be it. That is what it is. Like, that's just how you play. But if for some reason they make it in and we don't, I would like to see Nashville kind of get it done just because it's a great city, first of all. I love Nashville. I love spending time there. They are trying to get behind the hockey there and the city, and they are embracing it, and they're doing a real good job of it.
All the transplants.
It is all the transplants. You're absolutely right.
All the turncoat transplants.
I would not turncoat if I ever lived in Nashville. I would go right in with my red jersey on and let them know. But it would be cool to see that city get something. The risk you run is it turns into like a Carolina where it's like a flash in the pan and nobody cares anymore. So,
right, and they suck the next year.
Exactly. So here's
what Barry Trotz do with the cup. I mean, the guy's coached without one for so long.
Right? Like, holy cow.
Maybe does he get like a bonus so he can buy a neck?
Seriously, something. Seriously, Barry Trotz, man. That guy, he's going to retire. That guy's going to be the next Don Cherry one day. He looks too much like him when he grows his goatee out. But this is the time
I haven't heard him even talk, though. Does he even have a voice?
Yeah, he's kind of run of the mill. He's kind of run of the mill. But, that's who I'm going with, guys. We'll see. God willing, the Red Wings do not get eliminated from the playoffs. They're in good shape right now. Knock on wood over here in Seattle. They own the destiny like we talked about, so we will see what happens. Thanks, Maria, for the question. We appreciate it. Send some more. We'll make sure we get to them. Wow, guys, we've been on for a while now that I'm looking at the time here. Let's take it to some final thoughts, dude. I'll give you guys, we'll stick with the final thoughts theme here, and we'll go around the horn one last time. Casey, man, why don't you kick us off, dude?
I think we'll get both the wins this weekend. There's no reason for us to lose to Edmonton, and I think we're going to come out guns blazing, so to speak, against Vancouver just to make a statement about making our run for the playoffs. And so I think we've gotten to the point where we want, and we're going to put the pedal to the floor.
There we go. That's a bold statement, but don't forget, folks, we have one in Vancouver once this year, so it can be done. It can be done. I like where your head's at, Casey. Matt Saylor, to you, final thoughts.
I guess I'm glad that they have this break, but I'm also, part of me is worried too, that they might lose a little bit of momentum. But I hope that this experience out there in BC will be a good bonding experience for them. Now that everybody's healthy, they can all hang out together or whatever. I guess that'll be good. But I just hope they can come back on Friday and not have lost any momentum and also not take the Oilers for granted.
Yes.
The Oilers have sucked terribly this year, but they've also got, they do have some talent. They do have ability to surprise the Wings. Mm-hmm. So I unfortunately will go to the Washington. I'll be on the road. But I definitely will be interested to see how that goes, especially, and then Saturday. I mean, we're going up against Vancouver. That's going to be a big one too. I mean, Luongo's a good goalie. And at least in the regular season, so it's going to be interesting to see how the Wings respond there. So I think, I felt good about the team right now, but it's sort of these like really short range things that I always kind of find negativity coming up, sprouting up. So hopefully my bad feelings won't get borne out. So
guys, think about it like this. If the Wings, if you believe James Myrtle from the Globe and Mail and that 94 points gets it done and get you into the playoffs in the West. If the Wings win Friday and then win Saturday, we are 10 points away. That's five wins from being there. So I'm liking the optimism out of you guys right now. I like it. We'll see what happens and see if we can't get it done. Rob, you holding the same optimism? What do you got for final thoughts? I expect something good from you, my friend. A gem, if you will.
Well, I'll say
and
that.
And by the way, folks, before I forget.
Oh, please. Please.
I did promise a Herm to Hockey Town update. As you guys know, Herm to Hockey Town is getting ready to happen next week in Detroit. All of us on the show tonight will be there at Hockey Town Cafe. You can meet us. We can pretend like you want us to sign something, which we know is not true. More than likely, you can just have a beer with us, and that'll suffice. But Rob Disher now.
We're going to be signing tits all weekend. Mark it down.
Now, I know Rob. Now, here's Rob's
maybe
deal.
That's the slogan. Maybe that's the slogan for
That's the slogan. We're signing tits all week. I love it. That's great. Wow. Rob, now tell everybody, dude, you were telling us before the show, you have this crazy trip lined up that you got to throw down on your way through Detroit for H2H, man. Like, what do you got?
Yeah. So I'm going from the home base here of Austin, Texas, home of the hipsters this week for South by Southwest. The Monday before H2H, I'm flying out to Boston for a work event. Then that Friday, I'm flying into the D, and I'm meeting up with my brother Johnny, who was kind of my I was his teams were my my first I was the first a fan of Johnny. I think even before I was a fan of the Wings. He played hockey, grew up in Detroit, and we're rolling in hot to Motown there, meeting everybody up for the H2H Festivus, and then the next morning, getting on a plane, flying out to Las Vegas for the tail end of a buddy's bachelor party out there. No hotel room out there in Vegas for the night. Just staying up all night and then hopping on the 7 a.m. bird back here to Austin. So should be a good one.
That dedication, dude. That's what that is. And then don't forget though, Rob. You know we got to get that shot with Mrs. Petrella, and I'm in with that, man.
No doubt.
I'm in for that. Sign me up. I will take that shot with you guys. But guys, we are looking forward to H2H. It is going to be a blast. You can get all that information at herm2hockeytown.com. We are closing in on 1 week away, and I we were talking about it before the show, man. I cannot believe it is. It is right around the corner because it is, there's been a lot of planning and there's a lot of people to thank and, you know, come out. Hockey Town Cafe, 4 o'clock. Pre-game parties there. The game against the Wild. It could be a real big one. It could be a big one in terms of points for the Wings. Obviously everyone is, but we're looking forward to it. But, check it out at HermanHockeyTown.com, H2HockeyTown on Twitter, all that crazy stuff. For more on The Obstructed View, check us out at TheObstructedView.com. Shoot us an email, TheObstructedView@gmail.com. You can also – I'm just remembering things all – like I'm just forgetting stuff. We also had, if you remember in the last show, we had a little contest for a little T-shirt based on some trivia. The winner, turns out, is Robert Masters. Rob, congratulations, my friend.
Hey.
Not you, Rob. No, not you.
I know. It's been cold, man. I'm big Masters.
Rob Masters gets the win. So, Rob, send an email to theobstructedview@gmail.com with your mailing information, shirt size, all that good stuff. We'll make sure to get you the shirt. Congratulations for knocking that trivia dead. Good stuff all around. Like I was saying, though, you can check us out at theobstructedview.com on Twitter, RedWingsOV. And yeah, just keep in touch, man. We're happy to be back. I know I'm happy to be back. I'm excited, but we have been going all day long. So I'm going to sign off on behalf of Rob Disher from the production line, Matt Saylor from On the Wings, Casey Ritchie from Winging It in Motown. We're going to toss it over to our boy, Joe Burkle, from who's part of the group Warhol's Theory, man. They're going to take us out here with some music. You can find their new album, Warhol's Theory. It's called Electric Persuasion. It's on iTunes. Buy it now. Check them out on Facebook, facebook.com/Warhol's Theory. Guys, thanks for being on the show with me. Looking forward to a great week of Red Wings hockey as we hit the last week before Herm to Hockey Town. So good to be back, everybody. We'll see you on Monday for the next show. Go Wings.